Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Good evening, and thank you very much for joining us. Our guests tonight are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and from Washington, Libby Casey of APRN. Libby, let's start with you. Congress has been very busy this week dealing with the oil spill in the Gulf. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar has come forward with some important recommendations for the Mineral Management Service, and our congressmen have had a lot to say as well, our members of Congress, I should say. Please tell us, give us the outlook in Washington, the overview, please.
Well, of course, the update is that the oil still gushes. BP has not yet found a solution to stopping it, but they may try to clog the well this weekend through what's called top kill. That's pumping heavy fluids into the wellhead. Sludge is washing up in remote parts of Louisiana, and papers like the Washington Post today report that federal scientists say while they haven't seen a lot of dead animals washed up on shore, they do believe many more may be dying offshore and deep in the ocean. The feds have brought up concerns this week about BP's use of toxic chemicals to break up the oil and have said you need to have less toxic ways of doing it. But turning to Washington, President Obama is calling for an independent commission to investigate what's been going on, like what was convened after the Challenger space shuttle explosion or the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. But Secretary Salazar noted this week that after those accidents, you know, those industries were essentially shut down. The space program for a couple of years, the nuclear industry for decades. So he says how this is now handled is of the highest importance. And he told Congress this week that problems at the Minerals Management Service may indeed have contributed to last month's rig disaster. And Salazar says MMS has some bad apples, and he's been working on clearing house since he took his job. And for those of us who've been covering it, hearing Salazar talk about bad apples and house cleaning isn't new. He's been saying that about MMS from the get-go. It's notorious for having problems. Back during the last administration, there was a big sex and drug scandal. So when Salazar came in, cleaning up was important. It sounds like an obscure group, this Minerals Management Service, but it collects on average $13 billion in revenue a year. That's more than any other agency besides the IRS, so it's at the center of a lot of power. Salazar says he wants it split up into three branches, one that collects the funds, and then a different one to develop the energy resources, and a third to do things like environmental protecting and policing, because they were essentially doing both, taking money with one hand and giving the permits with the other. And Michael, you mentioned that everyone's kind of pointing fingers right now. Republicans are taking shots at the administration way of handling this, but Salazar has repeatedly and calmly defended it and pointed out this week that he sent his deputy down to the Gulf in the days after the sinking, the day after, rather, the sinking of the rig without, he said, even time to gather a toothbrush or a change of underwear. He said that at a committee hearing this week. Democrats are also on the attack, though. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who's a really mild-mannered guy, berated Salazar this week for MMS's lack of supervision. Now, the big question is, what does it mean for Alaska? Next Friday is the big day. That's when this 30-day report being prepared on offshore issues will go to the president. And, you know, all permits, all new permits are on hold until then. When Salazar has been asked about Alaska, he says, wait until after the report. Senator Murkowski says there's a big difference between deep water drilling in the Gulf versus the shallow water work that would happen in Alaska. And that's the thrust of her big argument. But environmentalists point to a big rig spill off Australia's coast last year that took months to be plugged, and that was in shallow water. So we're going to have to watch and see what happens next week as the report comes out. A slew of more hearings next week. Don Young's committee has just announced it's going to have 7 hearings starting next week. And Murkowski's Energy Committee is going to have a hearing about increasing the liability of oil companies when an accident happens, increasing that cap of money they have to pay. She was one of the folks who came out last week and said, well, let's not rush to conclusions and raise the cap too much, which got her slammed in the press, especially since everyone in Washington is in a do-something-fast mode. So next week's hearing promises to have some fireworks.
Thank you very much, Libby. Steve, let's turn to you. The congressional delegation was in town and for Wally Hickel's funeral, and while we were here, they appeared before the Chamber of Commerce and discussed some oil and gas issues, and especially what's going on in the Gulf and what it might mean for the implications might mean might mean for Alaska. What they have to say?
It's sort of a rare convergence having all three of these people in front of the Chamber of Commerce meeting.
That's right.
You don't see them all together back here in Alaska very often. So they all seem to be pretty united on a lot of different issues. They all expressed optimism that that Shell would be allowed to go ahead with its exploration program this summer. They're hoping that the Obama administration will honor the leases that Shell's already won. They've been working back in D.C., meeting with various colleagues in Congress and various agencies to also try and make sure that everybody is still on Shell's side, so to speak, to allow them to continue their plans. Also, it came out against Fish and Wildlife. Fish and Wildlife, of course, is considering...
Fish and Wildlife Service.
Fish and Wildlife Service, yes. Federal agency is considering a new designation for the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and that would basically lock it away for oil exploration. Right now, it's pretty much hands-off anyways. It would take congressional approval and presidential approval to get it opened up to exploration, but this designation as a wildlife area would be the padlock on the door for ANWR. Yeah. So they came out, and that's a perennial favorite, obviously, here. A litmus test for any federal candidate, and any state candidate for that matter. You have to be in favor of opening ANWR to oil drilling. So that was another one of the messages.
Unless you're running in California or something.
Yeah, if you're in Alaska and running here in Alaska, you got to be in favor of ANWR, no matter how impossible
it may be. Let's get Paul Jenkins in here. He's been waiting patiently. Paul.
No, I haven't.
I wanted to ask you... Craig Medved, writing in the Alaska Dispatch, reported that our delegation told the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce what they wanted to hear. Fair or unfair?
I'm not sure I would agree with the characterization. I'm not sure it can be classified fair or unfair. I think they told them the way it was. I'm not sure what they said that wasn't the absolute truth, but everything they said was true. They pointed to the constant conflict between the state and the federal government, dealing with things like ANWR property, millions of acres left over from Alaska statehood, drilling offshore, the whole thing. I think it's a mischaracterization to say that they were pandering or that they were just simply saying what they wanted to hear. If they wanted to hear that, fine, but I think what they told them was just the way it is.
And with regard to what Mark Begich had to say, Mike Bradner on this show many times has said that whether you're a Democrat or Republican from the oil state of Alaska, you are going to, when the time comes, support the oil industry. It does seem to be the case, doesn't it?
What else do we have here? I mean, if we don't support the oil industry here, what's second best? Fisheries at 2% of their take? I think to be against the oil industry in Alaska is political suicide, for starters, but it's also against jobs. It's also against the state budget then that is 85-90% paid for by oil. These guys, I mean, they don't adopt this stance because, gee, it's convenient. They adopt this stance because it's all Alaska has.
It's reality.
And it's also true that our state is, as a producing state like Texas, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. Louisiana, generally speaking, it has a very different view of the oil industry than the consumer states where people are upset about what they got to pay at the pump, basically.
Well, exactly. And the thing about the oil industry up here, just tucked away neatly on the North Slope or out in the inlet or someplace, you don't see it every day. You don't drive by it every day. You don't have to smell it every day. And it's kind of off in the hinterland. But here, the oil industry is money. And the oil industry is the future of the state until somebody comes up with something different.
And we all know people who are in the industry that are neighbors, yeah, and so forth.
Sure.
Libby, I wanted to get back to you. It surprised me a little bit that ANWR would come up at the present time, whether the Fish and Wildlife Service or anybody brings it up. It seems like an odd time to raise this in the middle of this ongoing disaster in the Gulf. What do you think?
Yeah, well, the wheels were sort of put in motion prior to what happened in the Gulf. The feds decided it was just time to review their direction with ANWR. It did come up, though, interestingly, Michael, at Senator Murkowski's Energy Committee hearing last week. Murkowski said, well, hey, if you don't want to do offshore, what about ANWR, Secretary Salazar? And some of the reporters were sort of taken aback because to them it seemed like a bit of a strange transition going from one to the other, but she was just saying, hey, why not? But Secretary Salazar shut it down right away and said, we're not going to go there. We're just not, that's not going to happen. It's not on the table right now.
And that would be another good example of we're an oil state and the reporters who are covering the hearing probably aren't from oil states, or most of them.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. To them, it was all oil. And it was like, if there's a spill in the Gulf, why would you want to be opening up, you know, the coastal plain? But in Senator Murkowski's viewpoint, it was, okay, if you don't want offshore, if you don't want to be in the oceans at these great depths of the Gulf of Mexico, let's go back up to Alaska.
Okay. Thank you, Libby. Steve, UPS is about to lay off a number of pilots here in Anchorage. It made a big story. Give us some of the details.
262 pilots for UPS are going to be laid off beginning this weekend, I believe. Some will lose their positions, and that'll continue through the end of the year. UPS says it's as a result of the worldwide recession. They're not flying as many planes as they have in the past, so they're laying off the pilots. About 84 of them are based here. Oh, they're all actually based here, but actually 84 of them, I think it is, actually live here in the Anchorage area. So these are folks who, you know, moved to Anchorage, own homes here, I presume, maybe rent condos, whatever, but contribute to the economy. Neil Fried says these are jobs. He's a state economist. He says these are jobs that contribute about $12.5 million, $13 million in payroll annually. And these are high-paying jobs. These guys get about $185,000 a year. So,
I guess that would be the difference between losing 200 jobs. I mean, this happens from time to time. Mm-hmm. Daily News, other places
right.
have lost several hundred jobs,
right.
and the kind of level at which these people are paid, right?
That's right, yeah, and it's a lot of spending power that is lost to the community. Now, there's a possibility that some of these jobs may be offset. These pilots are lower on the seniority list. They're considered junior pilots, so they're being laid off. Senior pilots will be moving into those positions. Some of them may take up residency here in Anchorage. It's possible that could happen. Whether it's going to be the, you know, 80 to offset the 80, 84 people who are going to be laid off, I kind of doubtful on that.
And there's been some discussion of whether UPS using larger jets, I believe the 777s,
right.
How much they might need Anchorage. Is that correct?
Well, there's some of that, yeah, as far as like overflying. But this is still a very significant refueling hub, still a very significant packaging hub. So hopefully Anchorage has got a long history with the cargo industry. But yeah, these jets are becoming more fuel efficient all the time. And we certainly saw that back in the late 80s, early 90s, when we lost a lot of international carriers that used to refuel here.
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
We used to see JAL, Korean Airlines, British Airways used to have a ticket counter all over at the North Terminal. And as these jets became more fuel efficient, we saw those carriers disappear from Anchorage. And then with the collapse of the Soviet Union, we saw airspace open up over Siberia that was once forbidden. So it was a quicker shot to the pole for those places.
Thank you, Steve. Hmm? Paul, a gigantic survey of Alaskans and the Alaskan economy suggests that Alaskans, unlike people in other states, think things are pretty stable here, and they don't seem to be as worried as they might be. What do you make of this survey?
I don't know. There's 750 people over a 10-day period in April, and they came up with, they want this to become a quarterly survey, by the way. About a third of the people, respondents, thought it was good and perhaps getting better, and two-thirds thought it was staying about the same. And it seems that the response to the economy when they asked the question was that the longer you've been here, the more pessimistic you are. About 60% of everybody surveyed said, yeah, I'm secure, everything's okay, but the ones that have been here 30 years or more wait a minute, we're not so sure.
Maybe that's long winter syndrome.
I think it's 1980, mid-80s syndrome,
yeah,
I think is what that is.
We know what it was like to go through that recession back in the 80s, and we don't want to see that happen again.
Yeah, they want this to be, this will be done every quarter, apparently. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they can track what people actually think.
Does this correspond with your experience as a reporter and when you talk to people, what you hear?
Yeah, I mean, it does. Most people here, I don't think the recession has hit this place as hard as it's hit other places in the country. But you don't see businesses closing up in droves or people moving out of here in a long line. So we're transitioning to a service economy. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's going to be less money probably and fewer businesses in the long run. But now, I don't know if there's a huge
difference.
And
you don't see what you see in Arizona, the unfinished subdivisions.
No, you don't see that. You don't see houses standing vacant. Right. Just mortgaged homes or repossessed homes by the dozens in some places.
Yeah. And so much of combating a recession, obviously there's some real financial winds that buffet communities when things go south, but so much of fighting a recession is psychological too.
Yeah, and I was just thinking as you said that we are not dependent on the sales tax for revenue, and the state government is not like in California and New York State,
right,
where they're furloughing people.
There's a general
feeling, I think, here that the state for the moment's in pretty good shape, although there are people warning.
Yes. We still have the constitutional budget reserve. We still have the permanent fund. The legislature's operating with a balanced budget right now, and I think there's some precautionary things out there. But for the most part, things like Paul says,
and there are a couple people running for governor who are giving us the "you will rue the day" speech.
True. Oh, yeah.
We've had sunshine too long. The rain can't be far away. Okay, Libby, Congressman Don Young, our congressman, has been squaring off with Minority Leader John Boehner over earmarks. Boehner and the Republicans, as well as Democrats, have said that this is not a year for earmarks. Don't proceed with them. But Don Young says, I represent Alaskans. Alaskans have presented me this list of earmarks, and I'm going ahead with them. What do you make of all this?
That's right. Well, the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call reported this week that House Minority Leader John Boehner has warned that any House Republicans who defy him and ignore his ban on earmarks could lose their committee assignments. And there are only about four Republicans, including Young, who are persevering in submitting these requests. So we'll see how serious Boehner is about his mandate here. And Congressman Young's reasoning is that people back home in Alaska and he can do a better job than the feds of picking the projects that deserve the money. Dermot Cole, the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, has a good column about it this week and points out that earmarks only actually add up to 1% of the federal budget. So this is really a political issue, a posture for the party to take and say, hey, in this time of tough spending and tough choices, we're not going overboard. But Congressman Young, I think it helps him back home because it helps with his sort of roguish profile. I'm not doing what the party tells me. But what it will mean here in Washington is unclear. If he's disciplined, it could give him even less power than he already has. So we will wait to see who backs down.
Libby, one of the things that struck me in looking at the list that was attached to Dermot Cole's column is that there were some very small appropriations, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for various different communities to improve their service, sewer service, things like that. And then there's some very big appropriations. In hundreds of millions, in a couple cases, over $1 billion. And it wasn't clear to me that perhaps Congressman Young not only had a list from Alaskans, but maybe even several items in there from his fellow members of Congress. What do you think?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he's gotten the list from, gotten requests from other places as well. I don't have that confirmed from his staff, but if you look at the list, it certainly seems to read that way. And some of the projects are cross-state. They might benefit someone in Alaska, but they'd also benefit folks in other states as well. He is someone who used to wield a lot of power and be able to do things with earmarks. Back when the Republicans were in power and he was the heads of committees, this was how business ran. Well, it's not how business is running now.
Okay, for the moment anyway. Paul, if you read the request list, they're in the billions
they're
of
huge.
Dollars.
If they're
assuming
huge.
This list is correct, and let's just scale it down, and we'll say they're in the millions. Yet, so many of Don's constituents and people who are going to vote for him, this is the kind of thing that they say they're absolutely against. This kind of government spending in the face of huge deficits, the United States is in trouble. But now they'll probably vote for Don anyway. How do you explain this?
You bring home the bacon and
right.
People forgive you. And I think that that's what we're talking about. Earmarks, I think, are one of the most misunderstood things in the country today. That money's going to be spent. It's just been taken from the executive branch directing where it's going to go and going into the legislative branch where Don Young can decide where it's going to go. The money's going to be spent. He's saying, hey, you need a bridge. I'll get you a bridge. And that's essentially what it is. He can do this because it's not really expanding government to any great note. At the same time, he tells the people in Alaska and people that, hey, I brought home the bacon, so forgive me. And they pretty much do, and they have for how many years now?
Steve, you wanted to add something?
There was a poll some months ago, and forgive me, I don't remember who conducted the poll, but it was pretty interesting. It was the vast majority of people who were polled just said, Congress is terrible. We think it's dysfunctional, it's broken. Congress is horrible. Well, do your Congress people contribute to the horribleness of Congress? Well, no. Our Congress people are okay. They're the only good ones. It's the other ones that are causing all the problems in Washington, D.C., but our Congress people are okay.
This gets us back to
I think all Alaskans are against earmark except ours.
Oh, yeah.
This gets back to one of Paul's favorite subjects. The Jesuitical distinction between wasteful products and vital public needs, which Paul makes very well on this show.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah. Well, it's the earmarks that go to places like Michigan and Ohio that cause the problem.
They don't need that stuff. No. They don't need that stuff.
Okay. Moving right along, the primary election returns are in places like Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and some other major states. We had a lot of coverage of it this week, and routinely in the reporting in the New York Times, Washington Post, wherever you look, McClatchy newspapers, where you hear about the voters who are riled up and mad and they're going to take back their government. Steve, are we getting much of this here in Alaska?
No, it's because they bring in the earmarks and we like them. No, it's not. I think it's because, first of all, I think, Michael, the reason why is just because of the topic we talked about a few moments ago, is that we're not really being hit hard by all the craziness that's going on in Lower 48 because of the recession. The economy up here is fairly vibrant. It's healthy. So we're not going through all those problems. People in the lower 48 are really getting hit hard. They're suffering. They're hurting down there. And they've seen. And so somebody's got to be held accountable. And yeah, Washington looks like a pretty prime target considering its record right now. Up here, it seems like the status quo seems just fine. Lisa Murkowski, they can't even find somebody to run against her in November.
The Democrats
can. I don't even know how many Republicans are going to sign up to try and wrestle that thing away from her. She's in pretty strong. Again, a recent poll that was done by Dave Didman, do remember that poll's researcher and sponsor, said that Democrats were even happy with Lisa's performance in the Senate. Alaska Democrats, right? I think Don Young, he's gotten into to the point where he's bulletproof now. The last few elections, no one's even come close to beating him, so I think he's fine too. Mark Begich, because he just won by a narrow margin, and things that happened with the investigation regarding Ted Stevens, jury's still out on him, but he's got lots of time to show what he can do in the Senate. So I think the congressional delegation appears just fine. Sean Parnell. He's been governor now for almost a year. The other candidates are having a real hard time getting traction against that fella, according to the polls. Again, a Dittman poll that just came out here within the last couple of weeks. He's just annihilating
the
competition.
I think the other candidates' polling would show the same thing. I would be surprised if it's much different.
All right. So I think Alaskans are pretty happy with what the state's doing right now, what the congressional delegation's doing right now. And there's no throw-the-bums-out kind of movement up here at this particular point in time.
Paul, the Tea Party group, they've been active up here as they have been all over the United States, but some people are beginning to think, well, that the Tea Party is basically just an extension of the Republican Party. True or false?
It's a very conservative wing of the Republican Party. I doubt seriously any Tea Partiers would vote for Democrats. The problem Republicans have is they may not vote for them either. Republicans have to prove to them that they're anti-tax and they're more Republican than the average Republican you find nowadays.
There was a great moment in an interview David Broder had with Senator Bennett of Utah, who just lost his seat in a caucus in Utah, where the voters came, Republican voters came to caucus, and he was challenged on what is your stand on the 17th Amendment. Now, the viewers out there who can recite the 17th Amendment accurately, they get a bonus, and we'll figure out what the bonus is in next week. Libby, Alaska natives were in Washington after visiting the oil spill in the Gulf. What did they have to say based on their visit?
Yeah, it was a group of four men and women from Barrow, Point Hope, and Dillingham, and their trip was paid for by environmental groups. They were all opposed to drilling off Alaska's coast before the trip, but this was like seeing their worst fears realized. And I met with them in Washington yesterday. They're making a pit stop here before going home so they can talk to the federal agencies that regulate offshore drilling. And their stories are very visceral. They took a seaplane and boat tour around the area of the Gulf that's been affected, and they talk about smelling the oil, how you just couldn't get away from it. It got in their hair, their clothes, and how you just couldn't smell the sea after a while. And one Point Hope elder, Earl Kingick, picked up some crude off the beach and described what it was like to hold it in his hand. And we have a picture of Earl doing that at the APRN website. And he says that just was such an emotional experience for him because he has that fear of something like that happening in Alaska, where he hunts for whale and has a subsistence lifestyle. And so their stories are very, you know, getting in touch with that fear that Alaskans have, of course, because of the memory, the rich memory of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And they talked about seeing fishermen pulling their boats out of the marinas to keep them from getting contaminated. And Rosemary Atungarek from Barrow said that she talked to some fishermen who said that they fear their lifestyles are about to be erased, as she put it, hour by hour, gallon by gallon.
Thank you very much, Libby. We're just about out of time here. Thank you for joining us here on Anchorage Edition. We'll see you next week right here once again. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.